Kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. My name is Lotta and I am the community manager and content creator here at Living Sober. And I'm delighted to be chatting today to Matty Anderson, a very special man. Matty is, well, he's a dad, a very proud and engaged dad. He's a son, also proud and engaged. Let's just say he's proud and engaged about everything. He's a partner. He's a proud Pacifica man. He's a keen ocean swimmer. He's a servant, which we'll come to what that means, and a councillor, a city councillor, and, of course, he is sober. Welcome, Matty.
Kia ora. Nice to be here, Lotta. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. It's a Sunday. Should be transparent about that. We're doing the mahi on a Sunday, but yeah, I'm really grateful for you coming on. So we met, for people who won't know, we met because we did a gig together at the Nelson Arts Festival, and as a kind of a literary event, you might say. But Matty was the chair of this panel session I did, and Matty, the minute that I knew that you were a fellow sober hero, to be honest, I just felt really comfortable because fellow sober people are my people. I just love that. So it was really great. And now we're doing this. So anyway, enough of me. Would love to hear a little bit about your story in terms of your relationship with alcohol. Do you mind letting us know when that started? When did you start drinking and how did it go for you at first?
Yeah, so I grew up in my mother's Niue and father's Palangi, and we did the whole Pacifica diaspora hard out. We come down south, and so I always felt a little bit different. And oh gosh, it started in college. So I was kind of I kind of had an attitude towards maths and science, and so college they ripped me away from my mates, and I ended up in accelerated classes with no one I kind of knew or identified. So, and didn't enjoy that part of my life, and then very awkward, but I got at rugby, so you know I found my space and my people, and again, you know, alcohol, you know, I wasn't as shy, and I remember $10 for 3 jugs, and I was 14, and and you'd have you know, you'd have keg parties under 19, so, and yeah, I guess that was part of the male psyche in the late 80s, early 90s, just the drinking and being, and those were all my heroes. So yeah, it started around that age, but even then I was drinking more than I loved it too much. I was drinking more than my mates. One memory I have is, like, you'd go to rugby and they'd have the gigantic chili bin, and you know, you'd be pulling the beers out, but they'd always have soft drink, and at the end of close to the end of the session, you're searching through this big bucket of ice to try and find the beer, and there's like cans of Coke and Sprite left. And I remember you wouldn't be able to feel your hands. You'd be in pain because you're searching through to find this one can of beer in it. Just, I mean, I look back now and it seems a bit weird, but yeah, it started pretty early, and it was more than my mates. You know, there were others that would do it as much as me, but I was pretty much a constant blackout drinker. You wouldn't stop.
So you feel like there was a part of it was the culture of the rugby club rooms and that camaraderie and what have you, but it was also about that discomfort. Who am I? Where do I fit in? I'm a bit shy or awkward or whatever. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I know for me. And then having the booze there just helped ease that inner dialogue that was uncomfortable and made you feel more at home.
Exactly, it was a safe space, and I didn't feel uncomfortable. Yeah, but sad.
Well, I mean, I can relate, as many of our members can. I mean, it's common, and they don't call it liquid courage for nothing. But interesting that you say that from the get-go, you sort of hit it harder than your peers, because that's a common thing as well, for those of us who end up struggling and needing to examine our relationship with it. Is, I mean, for me, the minute I touched it, I just loved it, and I wanted more, more, more. I didn't have an off switch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it might have been before that. I remember my dad never used to drink much, but he'd be sitting with his big quart bottle, and he'd have a big handle, and, you know, everyone else was drinking, and then it just knock it, the whole thing back in one go. And I thought that was neat. But as a child, you know, before you go to bed, I remember my dad would give the bottle to me and my boy, and you'd have a little swig. You think you're neat. But I remember always sucking, you know, really sucking on that bottle as a little one. But yeah. So from there, you know, instead of having an opportunity to make mistakes and self-reflect, I joined the Navy. And then I was awesome. Like, I was like, you know, that's what I thought. I was totally wrong. But yeah, then I managed to get myself into, so rugby could be so much fun, but, you know, to be honest, could be quite a toxic masculine environment. But that was, you know, Thursday nights and when I hung out with my mates, and Saturdays playing rugby. And now I went somewhere where I was, you know, it was 24/7, wall-to-wall testosterone and, you know, young men trying to out-alpha each other. And so, yeah, Navy, that was 20 years. I got away with it, and sometimes I was rewarded with it. But, you know, at the end of my career in the Navy, it was, even for them, I was out of control, and I was hiding kind of trauma and psychological stuff as far as how it was affecting my life and my thinking. And I didn't realize it. You know, it took years before I left, oh, actually, that my normal was quite bad, and wasn't a space where I could share or speak. Weaknesses. It was not something I could. That's what I felt. I felt it was a weakness, and I had to keep it quiet.
Yeah. Is there a boozy culture in the Navy? What sort of controls do they have around drinking, or is it not?
It's better now, but back when I was in there, it was you know, you get brought up on the best stories, or your heroes were the ones that would get drunk and fight, and we looked up to them. And then I got to a stage I wanted people to look up to me, so I embraced it. I was pretty good at it as well. Couldn't handle my booze, but yeah, there was definitely a drinking culture. That's how we celebrated and rewarded. But I could not stop. So it was, most of the time it was the binge stuff. But yeah, I got to a stage where I was daily drinking and hiding my drinking as well, and it was affecting my work and my relationships, and for it to be, for the Navy to think what I was doing was, maybe that's a bit too much. That is pretty bad.
And did you have because, you know, so much when we talk about relationships and work, but so much of the impact of alcohol is that internal stuff, that disconnect from ourselves. We can't hide from ourselves. Did you have an internal dialogue, a worry, you know, about your drinking or how you were feeling or anything during those years, or was it just all noise and chaos?
It was a lot of, towards the end, it was, but it was not an environment where I could even contemplate or imagine not drinking. And you know, I may have had that same thought process if I was not in the Navy, so, you know, the way my addiction was. But to be fair, not drinking and at that time with my relationship with the military and how I felt things were going and how it actually was, you know, not drinking in that space was just a ridiculous idea. And I manifested a lot of my, you know, instead of self-reflection, I'd be violent and unreasonable, and I'd there'd be parts of my personality which really flourished as someone in the military, as far as being hard and tough and masculine, but you know, it was not who I was or who I was brought up to be. So yeah, it was pretty messed up, and you know, there was a lot of unpacking once I left, because the last 3-4 years were quite miserable for me in the military, as far as what was going on in my head and how my drinking was affecting everything in my life.
So what happened? Did you left the military, and then how long after that did you put the bottle down, and what was that like towards the end of your drinking days?
It got worse.
As it often does.
yeah, it gets worse. So the military, I only just made it out. I got in so much trouble. Losing rank and mana, and I just, my poor family. So left the Navy, not feeling great, and then I went into other workspaces and thinking things would be different. I moved down to Wellington to work, and thought that would be a new life for me. Got in trouble there with the alcohol. So most of my jobs up until the last 5-10 years, you know, I haven't been fired, but I've kind of had to leave because of the alcohol. Wellington, and then I thought, oh, you know, getting into trouble here as well. I'll go overseas because it's New Zealand. So I went overseas, and oh, surprise, surprise, I'm still.
That's the problem. It's like we try and get away, but oh, there I am. Everywhere I go, there I am.
And then I tried Brisbane. Oh, that didn't work either. And that was pretty bad. That was as many muck-ups and lows as I've had. That was up there. So it was basically alone. I guess you'd say I was homeless, stuck, and I really wanted to I really wanted to die. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't live the way I was, and I couldn't stop. And I waking up, you know, sometimes you wake up in the morning, you have a terrible dream, wake up and then you come to realize this, oh my God, it was just a dream. That wasn't my experience. It was like, and the nightmare was my life. And I remember just waking up and seeing and being so disgusted that I was still there. And I did try to a few times, but I don't know.
Just so
I don't try and think about how I got away with the stuff, but I'm here now, and I'm very grateful.
Because there was this guy inside of you, the wise, kind, gentle guy that was just needed to come out, and he got you out. So what? How did you quit?
So I just total loss of pride, and giving up. Or handing it over, and there were things that I didn't understand. Like as much self-loathing as I had, there were people in my life I really liked and respected, and they, for some reason, they believed in me. And yeah. I do remember that. I remember, so I may not have answered the door every time. I may have ignored the text or not picked up the phone. But there were people that believed in me when I didn't, and that helped out. So I've lost. You know, I'd lost my employment, my home, my family, and then I had to, that didn't take hold the first time, but I started going to AA, and it was hard because I'm an engineer and I need to know how things work and how to fix things. You know, I can fix all these things and I'm so smart, but I couldn't figure out myself. And so I started going to the AA meetings, and they'd make me angry, but I would keep going. So I did the whole, it's just every day, as many as I could go to. And I was trying to find God as well. And I was trying anything. You know, I was reading all these books. In Thailand, I spent like a month in a monastery trying to figure out. And I tried church, and I was trying to figure out, just work so hard, But, you know, over time, so I had periods of sobriety and then I'd fall over again. And, I come to Nelson. So I'd been saved. My ex, God bless her, and my in-laws, they got me back to New Zealand, and I kind of went into a program for a bit. It wasn't rehab, it was respite. So I'd keep going into respite in Mangere and hitting as many meetings as I could. And then I come down to Nelson to try and work and keep going at the meetings. And it was a great community. I probably had 3 or 4 relapses. And it finally stuck. And it is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life, like by far. And one thing I do remember, I don't forget. And I sometimes things are tough. And it's, you know, people will mention, Matty, you know, this is really hard. And I'm going, and in my head, I'm going, no, it's not. I've done hard. And this ain't it.
How long ago when you had your last drink?
It was around Mother's Day 2019. So 4 and a bit years. And God, it's so aggravating sometimes. Like, you know, I love a broken vessel and I can see them and I think they're beautiful. And I you know, you can see it in the personality, and that, you know, you've got a history, and it makes it a little very much harder for someone to look down their nose at any human being when you've been broken yourself. So I'm kind of grateful for, I wish it had happened earlier, but I don't think I'd be the person I was or be as brave as far as stepping into spaces I don't know I should be, or advocating for others, or just being absolutely non-judgmental. And I'm a good dad now, for God's sakes. It's just, you know, I stopped drinking and then things weren't as bad. Like, oh, you know, I'm staying at my job, or, you know, people like me, or I'm not waking up feeling horrible, or my health's better, or I'm smiling, you know. So I'm very grateful.
And how are you now with uncomfortable emotion and feeling vulnerable and all those things that we tried to avoid for so many years? Because that's the work of sobriety, right? Every single day, it's like whatever comes, we're just sitting in it. I found that the hardest. How are you at that now?
I've been doing that for a while now. So, and that's the thing, is like a lot of people have a bad day and, you know, go and have a glass of wine. And, you know, I can't do that. I think it's a gift as well, because it's okay to feel bad, you know, and I'll feel bad, but I try not to attach to that. You know, I'd rather not feel bad for like 3 or 4 days. So I've got to feel stink. And, you know, what can I do? Because I can't, you know, they say people, places, that I have no control over people, places and things. I have limited control over myself. But, you know, if something is bad, you know, it's got to sit with me and I've got to deal with it. And that might involve ringing someone up and say, hey, sorry, or doing something smart for myself, or
like jumping in the ocean.
Yeah, I've done that a few times. Like if I've had a really bad day, that's my beersy, as I'll drive down, and, you know, it'll be in the middle of the night in winter, but God, I feel so much better afterwards. But yeah, so I don't feel wiser than anyone else, but I do think that being forced, because I don't have the old coping mechanism of not coping, no, I do have to, and I don't get it right, and I don't fix anything, and sometimes I am unhappy for a long time, but no, I sometimes I can be aggressive as far as attacking some of my problems, you know, and really looking at, and you know, when you've been an alcoholic, you have debased yourself and you've have been to the bottom and really looked at yourself. So I can self-reflect and go, oh, actually, maybe that was me. And that's okay.
Well, first of all, bravo. And I'm so, you know, happy for you that you've got to where you are now. And I'm so happy you're part of the sober gang that we're in, this great gang of people in the world, and the mahi you now do, which we'll get to. But I just wondered, because you said you sort of, you'd lost your work, your home, your family, your whānau. How has it been reconnecting with all of that, and particularly your family, and also your culture and who you are as a Pacifica man? Because, you know, how did that go for you, being connected to who you really are and feeling uplifted by that?
Yeah, you know, when you're unwell, you isolate. So, and I'd been isolating for, geez, it would have been like, I might say, you know, for months, but it was years. I was, and self-isolating means, you know, not being open or communicating with anyone, or, you know, oh God, you know, my ex, only having one person and dumping on them everything and all the responsibility. But so I've been really lucky in Nelson. So I've connected with the Pacifica community. So I wasn't brought up with the culture that much. That my mother, so we went down south, and, you know, back then, you know, 70s, 80s, you know, a lot of families thought, we'll bring our children up, we'll assimilate, bring you up the Palangi way, and because that would be better, you know, opportunities, job, education, everything. So, and they've figured out now that that wasn't the smartest thing to do. You know, we need a lot more. So I didn't know where I fit in, and sometimes I would pick Māori spaces. So recently I've been involved with the Pacifica community in Nelson, and I'm just so grateful. So I started at council, we'll get back into that, but when I started at council, I was working really hard and I just wasn't feeling okay. I felt myself going, and then, you know, 4 weeks and someone said, oh, Maddie, you need to come and help us out. So I went to this event and I was in this room surrounded by Pacifica and they were all singing. And I think it's in my DNA, you need your safe spaces and being able to sit with people. I may not understand the language, but I kind of feel I understand, you know, I get the intent and the culture in it. I don't know, it feels okay. So that might be added workload and work for me, but to be honest, it very much feels like therapy when I am in those Pacifica spaces. So I'm so very grateful, and the gift I have now is I have two sons, and I understand that, and they like it as well. You know, sometimes I drag them to stuff, but I'll drag them to Pacifica, and they will sit still, and they will enjoy and absorb. So, yeah, hopefully trying to do good things for me, but maybe break some things that happened in the past. And, yeah, I'm worried about my voice sometimes.
And it's a powerful way of you describing that moment of just walking in a room and people singing, and it's like it's in your bones, that somehow it's in your DNA that is you. And that gives you, it's an intangible thing. You can try and describe it with words, but that feeling of being connected to something that actually is true and meaningful is so very powerful. And it's really wonderful when I hear about people in sobriety who connect in with some part of them that they haven't been connected to, and how impactful it is and strengthening. Yeah, amazing. And I didn't mean to cut you off when you said you worried about your boy. I have three teenage sons. I don't know what specifically you're worried about, but I get it.
Yeah.
Tell me in general, in terms of Pacifica and Aotearoa, is there much of a drinking culture there? Is alcohol problematic for the Pacifica community, and what can help?
Yeah, so I think one of the strengths with the Pacifica community is are the churches. So, and family. So there is the collectivism and the community type the aspects of my people, and then there are bad things as well, guilt and shame and duty. You know, it's not everything's perfect, but my community is targeted. You know, they're poor, and they're in areas like I get frustrated. I go drive around my areas, and it's, you know, takeaways and bottle stores and blimmin' loan shops and those frickin' trucks. It just makes it and like okay, they are targeted, and they are susceptible hosts. And there is a, you know, there is a history of, you know, violence as well. Very strict discipline, but you know, it's tinged with a lot of love as well and family. So I was really lucky. My I was not brought up with my immediate family as such would go and visit, but none of my cousins drink. And I just imagine what a positive group that would have been for me to go spend more time with a community that didn't have to associate celebration with alcohol. And and drinking is okay. So there are the different islands that have the carver ceremonies, but it is not part of our culture to be to have alcohol associated with our celebrations. So my 21st, I preloaded, but there were a lot of family. It was a very family thing. So there was no alcohol at my whole 21st. And afterwards, and it does get frowned upon. So there is drinking. A lot of it's in shame and, you know, men hanging out and socializing, you know, having a great time with sports. But yeah, it's not flash, but it's not embedded in our culture as far as it being a requirement for an event or a celebration.
Yeah. Understood. But still, we live in New Zealand, which is saturated. Yeah. okay, we haven't got too much longer, but I wanted to circle back. I hate that saying. It's very, you know, businessy. Let's circle back, Maddie, to you said at the start one of the descriptors for your who you are is a servant. What do you mean by that?
I think that's part of my wellness plan. And sometimes when people find out what I do, it may, from the outside, it may seem out of control as far as what I do in the community. But I've been, it keeps me safe and it keeps me sober and it makes me happy. And, you know, being in service work, the pay is terrible. Like, I was an engineer, you know, but I hated my job and I was killing myself. And, you know, it was an interesting conversation to try and have, but my partner, she's totally on board with, okay, I really want to do this and I'm helping people, but it's going to be another pay cut. But, you know, I'm well and I'm doing what I should be doing. But, and I think it's something I've always been attracted to, even through my drinking. I'd end up doing a lot of volunteer work, and now it's a shame that I had to wait, you know, 30, 40 years to figure out or find out what you're going to like doing, and that's what you should do as a job.
Mm. But I mean, how great that you got there. And I mean, you're a city councillor, and we won't go into this, but I'll put some links in this post when I publish, because you've actually tried and made, you know, made a difference in terms of the work you're doing, trying to push back against some of the problems we have with big alcohol's power in our society and its association with sport and things like that. And you were very vocal in the media and voting against, you know, changing some alcohol regulations for cricket matches. I mean, we won't go into it, but I just want to really acknowledge that and say good on you, because it's a big fight. We've got a long way to go, but little things, they make a difference. And it just adds to this narrative of we need change. And we do need change, because there are so many people who are struggling.
No, thanks for that, Jan. And us in recovery, we're pretty awesome when it comes to advocating and sticking up for stuff. Yeah.
True. All right. Well, before we close, is there anything else you want to say? And I suppose particularly thinking of our members here at Living Sober, we have thousands of people who belong to our site, and many of them will be Pacifica people or others, and they're newly sober, or they're still drinking but knowing internally they need to change. Any words for anyone watching this who thinks, how could I possibly stop this habit?
Yeah. So it is possible for anyone. I tried to kill myself a few times, and I thought there was no chance for me. I was basically homeless and had nothing. And there is hope. It is really hard. It's the hardest thing you'll ever have to do. But there are people out there that love you and care. They might be strangers. You might not have met them before. You have to get into a mindset of saying yes. And if someone asks you what's wrong, you might have to talk to them about it. But yeah, you have to reach out. Say yes, and honestly, there is hope. I didn't think all I hope for is the noise to stop and me maybe not to hate myself so much. And now I'm happy and productive. And so there is hope. Okay, it took me 30 years, but it can be done. But you know, there's a lot of really good people out there that care about you. And yeah, just say yes and give it a go. Doesn't work every time, but you might get there. Yeah.
Mm. What a gift you are. Thank you so much, Maddie, for coming along to do a sobriety chat with me on your Sunday and opening up. And I really, really appreciate the gift you've given us. So thank you, and keep up the great work, and we'll stay connected.
Yeah, you too, Lottie. You keep up the fight as well. I work my end, you work your end.
Let's do it. Okay. Cheers.
See ya.
Bye.